Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 86.
This week on the podcast, Election Day provides wins for progressives, the Clinton Mafia, and rude blowhards.
The Senate's ENDA bill moves forward, straight into John Boehner's never gonna happen pile.
And this month's job numbers are fake, but we'll tell them to you anyway.
We have the first segment in our sports series, Big Brain Sports, with guest Erica Barden.
And the U.S.'s beloved waiting till later strategy fails to deliver results in nuclear talks with Iran.
Benghazi is still not a scandal, and we'll explain why.
And we've got a very special Election Day edition of Hillary Pillory.
Stay tuned for all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the internet at the same place that we tell you to find us every week. It's just our website. It's just www.braintrustlive.com.
Easy.
And we're like all over social media. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr.
Vine.
Find us on Vine. We can't find ourselves on Vine,
No.
But you can find us there.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
if you're under the age of 25, you'll be able to find us.
Right.
And then you can tell us how to find ourselves.
Right. And tell us how to work
what
it.
Vine is. Exactly.
Yeah.
But
we had some big elections this
week. It's like our favorite thing.
I know.
This is everything that we live for.
Yeah, this is, election season is really sort of
what
where
we're
it's
all about.
At for us.
Yes.
It's the only thing that's important, really.
Exactly.
Winning and losing. It's what gets done is sort of just
not
vaguely irrelevant.
It's the thing that happens in between elections.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
But so, obviously, this was not the highest profile election season.
No.
Because there's no congressional election this year. There's no presidential election.
We're going to pretend like it was huge.
This was some serious shit that went on.
Yeah, right.
Because what happens on election day for us is that around 6 o'clock, we start to just like full on panic about results.
Right. And Lila has to leave.
I have to leave work.
She leaves work at six.
I have set an important precedent for myself at work. I just knocked the mic. Maybe that made a noise. I've set an important precedent for myself at work where if I leave past six, people think I'm the kind of person that leaves past six. Whereas if I leave before six,
that's the mistake people make.
I learned that from Brent.
Yeah.
Because Brent, for a long time, was the only person at his office leaving at 6. And it was just because he was doing it. You just have to do it to do
right.
it. That's the only way that you can get it done.
Right.
By doing it.
Yeah. You either leave or you don't.
Right.
And if you don't, then you're there.
Exactly.
And that's what you don't want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so 6 o'clock is when we start getting election results here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
For the East Coast races where the polls have already closed and the, precincts are finally reporting. So we start needing to follow these races at the moment that I'm getting into my car.
Right. So I spend the next hour frantically texting Lila,
right.
sort of like every time there is a new precinct reporting, which is every 30 seconds, basically.
Exactly.
So
we had a really exciting ride on Tuesday because Terry McAuliffe's race was
really close.
A shitstorm
of
craziness.
I was worried about this, but luckily I sort of like, I love all of the interactive maps that they have where
God.
You can see like where places are reporting from. And I remember very specifically on the night of the 2012 election, when they were getting ready to call Virginia, like Obama was still losing there. And he ended up winning by a decent chunk there because basically the last places to report are like the DC suburbs.
Well,
and like
their polls close later than everywhere else in the state.
Right.
And there's more voters over there.
Right. So
there.
Basically you spend all night panicking. My mom was sending me text messages. Why is Terry McAuliffe losing?
Right.
She was like, there's already 90% of the
he
precincts
was
in. And I was like,
to win by like 6 points.
Right. And I was a little worried at that point because I knew it was, he was polling way more ahead of that. But I was trying to get everyone calm because I had seen this
This has
happened to me before. So I was pretty sure that he was going to win, but he certainly didn't. I mean, he didn't
pull out the astounding victory we all hoped for.
No.
He only won by 3 points.
No.
The final results were 48-45.
But also, I kind of am a little glad that that was that. I mean, Ken Cuccinelli is terrible, and it would have been a tragedy had he won.
Yeah.
But as I said to Lila, I texted her, and I was like, I almost feel gross. Pulling so hard for Terry McAuliffe because I like Terry McAuliffe.
Well,
I mean,
this is what happens when Clinton's, and I'm putting him in the, he's a member of the Clinton family for all intents and purposes.
He's in the mafia.
This is what happens when Clinton's running races, is people are like, all right, I'll vote for this guy.
Right.
It's not like astounding victories because everyone's sort of like holding their nose to vote for them.
Right.
You know? Democrats in Virginia were not dying to have Terry McAuliffe be their governor.
No.
They were dying to not have Cuccinelli be
their
governor.
And independents were dying to not have him.
Yeah. He lost independents by 9 points. He won all the people that you know, all the groups that you would expect him to win. You know, he won, well, he won among Democrats, obviously, but also, you know, young voters, college graduates,
right.
Women, stuff like that. But he was leading, he was losing, like, independents and things that, like, you think of independents and moderates as being in the same boat.
Right.
And I would guess that probably in Virginia they're not. I would guess that a lot of independents are far to the right.
I think you're right.
But that is an alarming statistic. He won moderates by 22 points.
Which,
he's a moderate. So if he didn't win them by a zillion points, that would have been super problematic.
And Cuccinelli is basically a Tea Partier, so
exactly.
He's not a moderate either.
But it just wasn't the astounding victory that... And this is a state where 30% of the electorate consider themselves independents.
Right.
So that's like a big chunk of the electorate. That's not just some randos.
No,
over
it's
in
not.
Some rural part of Virginia.
But I think what you can take away from that sort of is, I mean, they had a Republican governor. The presidential races have been close. That's definitely a battleground state. It's a governorship pickup. I mean, it's on the whole good that he won.
And Virginia has not had a governor that's the same party as the president since the 70s.
Wow.
They're just a bunch of contrarians over there.
Right.
They're just walking around hating whatever's going on.
Right.
Voting against it.
Yeah.
But this is, I think, a good sign. It was an important sign because you forget, you know, Virginia sounds like a horrible place, but you forget that a lot of Virginia is actually living in D.C.
It's D.C., right.
And so because of that, it really doesn't feel right for Virginia to be having conservative leadership.
Right.
That close to the seat of power.
I know.
You want them to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like they did the best they could here.
That's all they could do.
Yeah. But...
And I think, didn't the guy who was running as the independent, didn't he get like 7% of the vote or something like that?
Yeah, there was a pretty considerable showing by the independent candidate. Well, this was, like, everyone was holding their nose for whoever they were voting for here. No one was, like, dying to vote for Cuccinelli. No one was dying to vote for McAuliffe. Like, I assume that the independent everyone felt ambivalent about because he was not going to win.
Right. But, and I think that what I had read was because, like, they felt the, that probably didn't actually, even though it was 7%, probably did not cause Cuccinelli to lose because what most people were saying was that the first 5% of however much that guy got would probably be coming evenly from both of them. Because he had really hit Cuccinelli on his, like, stance on gay marriage. So, like, there were probably sort of, like, you know, some young people who were, like, voting for him that would have been voting for McAuliffe, potentially. So it wasn't just Republicans who voted for this
independent.
It wasn't,
like, a Ross Perot-style situation.
No. It wasn't.
It was just a really, like, the kind of race that you only end up with in a governorship or some other local election, where there's just a random guy who doesn't have a party, really, and is just sort of hanging out, saying whatever.
Yeah.
Compare McAuliffe's 3%, though, to Bill de Blasio's 49% margin.
Such
Holy
a dream.
Holy moly. This is everything I've ever hoped for.
Yeah, it was a bloodbath. And it's the first time they've had a Democrat running the city for 20 years.
Yeah, I know. Since Dinkins.
Yeah.
And I remember when Dinkins got run out of office. He was a one-term mayor. That was a disaster.
Yeah.
And we've been sort of under this kind of like
two terms of Giuliani and three terms of Bloomberg.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's mind-blowing to me because my sort of, on the ground level, New York City looks a lot like this. It's a very progressive city.
Yes.
Ground-level politics are very much, you know, are very much supporting these kinds of candidates. Candidates like Bill de Blasio and Scott Stringer and, like, other progressive local Democrats who, you know, all of the borough presidents are Democrats except for the borough president of Staten Island, which no one counts Staten Island. But, like, the city council is heavily Democratic. Like, on a local level, the city really does look like this.
Right.
And it's been so bizarre to watch the city transform into this weird sort of, like, investment banker nightmare because of these business mayors who were there for Wall Street.
Yeah.
And sort of, like, a lot of the things that have changed the way that changed the culture of the city really significantly have been derived from this, like the sort of like Disneyfication of Times Square.
Yeah, right.
Like no one wanted Times Square to be full of hookers, obviously.
Right.
But like also no one wants Times Square to be the horror show that it is
right
now.
Olive Gardens either. I mean, right.
Like there are so many examples of like small changes to the city that occurred because this type of leadership had been going on for so long and it was so business focused and it was, you know, like unions were getting screwed and all of the sort of people that build the city were getting screwed.
Yeah.
And then it became unaffordable for them.
Right.
So this I think is a really like, this has been going on for a while. I mean, I often say that I would have never left New York City if it hadn't been just unaffordable to live there.
Yeah.
For someone like, I would have literally been living with my parents for the rest of my life if I had stayed there.
Yeah.
And so, for someone like me to leave the city, really says that something is going wrong.
Right.
When you're leaving
that's your city.
That's my city, and Bren can confirm that it's all I fucking talk about.
Yeah, she's threatening to go back all the time.
All the time. I spend all of my time threatening to go back there. Uh-huh. But the problem is you can't do what I do there, and right. you can't even do something like what I do there. You can't have a life like I have there.
Yeah.
You can't be a middle-class person there anymore. I mean, you can't be a new New Yorker and be a middle-class person, or a young New Yorker trying to make your way and be a middle-class person.
Right.
You're either rich or you're poor. And if you're poor, you can't live there.
Right.
So it's too bad. But this is like a really, just like finally... A real candidate just got, like, their voice in at the right moment.
Yeah.
They, you know, they finally didn't have a big money Republican running. That's been a big problem. I mean, I was talking to my dad earlier this week, and I was like, you know, Bloomberg just eked out a victory in the last election. He outspent Bill Thompson 50-1. So he literally, Thompson spent like $1 million on his campaign or something, and Bloomberg spent $50 million, most of his own money, to run that election, and only barely won.
Yeah.
Like, this has been sort of threatening to go this way for a long time. Yeah. It was why I didn't want to see a Christine Quinn run in that race, because I thought there's no, you know, she's going to pull a Hillary. She's going to get in there and be moderate and kind of depressing and a part of the establishment.
Yeah.
People aren't going to get excited about it. People are so excited about this. The level of excitement is really... high.
Yeah, he was really sort of like, he just, everything sort of just like coalesced for him.
Yes.
He was really sort of like the right candidate at the right time with the right message. There was no way that he couldn't win by 49% ultimately.
No.
He was perfect.
Very low turnout because everyone was like, well, he's going to win by 1 million points.
Right.
Why am I going to vote?
Yeah.
He had been polling like 50 points ahead this whole time. He at one point he went down, like the headlines were all like de Blasio's lead is, you know, decreasing. And it was like, it went from like 65 to 55% or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
There are going to be, of course, some challenges now that he's actually in office. And that's what a lot of the media that was kind of pull in for other people has been focusing on, because it is very difficult, as I think someone like Obama can attest to.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to come in with all of the tools at your disposal and actually get done what you promised to get done.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a budget that he's got to adhere to. He's got to still figure out how to, like, spend the city's money in a responsible way.
A lot of the things that he wants to do, he's trying to get sort of, like, pre-K for everybody in the city. A lot of those things he's trying to pay for with some taxes that he has to get approved by the state,
that has been really challenging about the way that taxes work in New York City is that they all have to be approved by the state. It's why when they got rid of the commuter tax, we were never able to get it back. We never will get it back. It was foolish. I still am furious about it. This happened years ago. It was foolish to let that go, because the state is never going to approve them, because a lot of people from outside of New York City work in the city and don't want to pay a tax to the city for the services that they use during the day. I would say that that's obnoxious and that they should.
Yeah.
But because of that, it's really like, you can have lots of grand plans for New York City. It's really challenging to raise taxes there. It's not challenging to raise certain kinds of taxes there.
Right.
Certainly property taxes have gone through the fucking roof.
Right.
But it's difficult to raise the kinds of taxes in a fair way that someone like Bill de Blasio would be looking for.
Right.
That's a challenge. Obviously he's promised a lot. And and we're talking about a city that's sort of in the throes of this like enormous economic divide.
Right.
Where it's going to be really hard to work your way out of that. The city has been sold to developers. It's sort of like a playground for the rich at this point.
Yep.
I have already filled in my application to go work for
de Blasio. I know, it's very exciting.
My mom heard on the radio that his transition team had started a website to accept applications.
Yeah.
I know that I live in Los Angeles and I know they won't call me because of that, but I submitted my application as soon as I heard about it. And I said in my application that one of the things that I wanted to, I was so excited that he was going to be mayor because I grew up in a neighborhood that became a playground for the wealthy after we had sort of invested in it.
Right.
And that I felt like losing my own neighborhood and my own home really was like a big loss.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see a city that was going to take people like me who were native born and raised and like make it a place that we could live in.
Yeah. But one thing, you know, there are certainly challenges that he's going to have to face, but he was not the only progressive in the city that was elected.
No, there was a lot of progressive.
They made a lot of, the most. I mean, I was reading an article on Politico, basically, that, like, New York City is now sort of, like, going to be able to kind of be a petri dish for this type of governing. Because nothing will stop him, basically.
Right.
I mean, there's no, other than maybe the state on some of these tax things, but, like, he really... all of the people who are going to have to sort of like okay the things that he wants to do are going to okay the things that he wants to do.
Isn't it exciting, guys?
It's exciting.
It's so exciting.
So,
and this, but this has been the case for a long time on the sort of local level in New York City. The city council's always been progressive. They're up to all sorts of shenanigans.
They've just never had a mayor who sort of wanted to,
you know, when,
partake.
When Christine Quinn became the speaker, I've always thought that she was a little compromised. But part of why she was so compromised is because she was trying to work with Bloomberg. She herself is not progressive. She's not super progressive, but she's not progressive.
Sure.
She would have gone with the flow, whatever. She's an opportunist. She
Now that there's a progressive mayor and there's more progressives on her city council, I mean, she's
she's not going to be the speaker anymore.
She's not the speaker anymore.
But I'm excited to see that the people who were sort of trying to work with Bloomberg will have someone different to work with who is maybe more in line with what people's principles actually are.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense.
But so it's exciting times. I couldn't be more thrilled. I've been feeling great all week.
I know you have. Yes.
It's all I've talked about.
Yeah.
It's funny because we don't live there.
I know.
But that's life, isn't it? Boston also elected a new mayor. That was a lot less exciting of a race. It was sort of a race between like two guys who were sort of the same, and one of them won by 4 points. But it was like 52-48, and they were sort of on the issues, they were exactly the same, but one of them was using a lot of like, you know, symbolism to appeal to the rich and talking about how he wanted to turn government into something more like an Apple store. And then the other one was sort of like the blue collar guy.
Right.
The blue collar guy won. They're now sort of like trying to raise suspicions about whether he'll be able to negotiate with unions in good faith because he's a union guy. I love when the mayor's a union guy.
Yeah, right?
Like, give unions everything. Pay them all the money.
I know. Yeah, seriously.
Give them all the pensions and pay them all the money.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
You won't be sorry because your city is filled with union workers who work for the city.
Yeah.
One of the biggest employers in many cities is the city. So
right,
when the city
exactly.
is paying people well, people are doing well in the city.
That's true.
That's how it works.
That's how that works. Yeah, exactly. But I think the person who got third in that race was the sort of like the most interesting part of that race because it was the Red Sox World Series MVP David Ortiz.
The write-in candidate who wasn't running.
Right.
And is a baseball player.
Yes. Got third place.
Yeah. So, and that was...
That's not shocking. They... just sort of won the World Series. So, I mean, I'm not... It sort of makes sense. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but you know what I mean.
I once was looking up, because someone who I'd gone to high school with ran for some very local office in New York. And so I looked up the results of that election, and they listed all of the writing candidates because it was, like, a very local election.
Uh-huh.
There were, like, 3 votes for Mickey Mouse. There were votes for Mickey Mouse that were misspelled.
Yeah.
A lot of misspelled, like, people. There
that's
were, like...
too bad.
You know, there were, like, votes for Santa Claus in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are writing in a bunch of nonsense.
Doesn't your mom vote for herself sometimes?
Yes. And she votes for her friend Chuck a lot, too.
Okay.
And sometimes she'll be like, Lila, the strategy in this election is we're going to write Chuck in for everything except for this one thing, and then we'll write ourselves in for that. Or, like, she has, like, a lot of strategies that involve writing in people for... Like, you know, when you're, like, going and voting for, like, a judge and, like, everyone's a Democrat and you don't know who they are anyway.
Yeah.
We're all about writing ourselves in for those.
Got it. Okay.
I often also, for state senators and state assembly people, where my parents live and where I used to vote, would get redistricted a lot. And so got redistricted out of the district that we liked.
Uh-huh.
And we were pissed about it. So we refused to vote for the woman that we were all supposed to vote for the Democrat, because she's kind of an annoying Democrat, Liz Krueger. I'm not about it. and so we started writing ourselves in for that a lot. I used to always write myself in for that election when I was voting there. So... You do what you got to do.
Yeah.
You know? Sometimes you got to vote for yourself. I would make a great state senator, and I think people know that.
Yeah.
I don't know what people. My mom knows it, though.
I know.
New Jersey had their gubernatorial election.
Yes.
The real election, not the election that they threw millions of dollars into just to make sure that Cory Booker and Chris Christie didn't have to run on the same ticket.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
We just had a big race in New Jersey. So you might have forgotten that Election Day was coming.
Right, exactly. So anyway, Chris Christie won.
Shocker.
With a big, huge sort of like going away. So of course everyone is like all...
like, oh, he's going to be president.
He's going to be president.
We're going to talk a little later about why he wasn't the vice president already.
We sure are.
So, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of those things are going to be the reason that he's not president. He's not going to be president in 2016.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've talked a lot about it, and we're going to talk about it more because we never get tired of this topic.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting win because of what it says about where the Republicans could be finding votes and where they're not finding votes.
Right. Well, exactly. And, like, you've sort of, like, because he has now sort of, like, won this going away, reelected in a blue state, there's sort of, like, a lot of like, he sort of has now become the face for sort of, like, the non- Ted Cruz Republicans, yeah. basically. I mean, he sort of is the...
He won a majority of women voters, which for a Republican to do at this moment is unheard of. He won a majority of Hispanic voters, also unheard of for Republicans.
And for a one who calls women sweetheart.
Yeah, no, for someone who's a misogynistic prick, that's really impressive.
Yeah, exactly.
He won a significant number of black voters, which for a Republican anywhere is quite a big deal.
Yeah.
And these are all groups that the national GOP is dying to attract and doesn't know how to.
But here's the thing that I think that he said that I think should, and sounds so stupid, but I think that the Republicans should take note of, because basically they were asking him about this, and he sort of said, he was like, I went and campaigned to those people.
Right.
I mean, I think that
you gotta go to places you're not comfortable.
I think that so often the, you know, Hispanics and the African Americans just feel like the Republicans don't care about them because they don't.
They have one token black guy at their rally, and they show him on TV.
But I would say Chris Christie probably doesn't really necessarily care about them either.
Well,
but I mean, like, he's trying to look like he is.
Yeah.
Like, the national Republicans sort of just aren't even, like, pretending like they want to care.
Well, this is the other thing that I think they could take note of, which is that Chris Christie, and this is even something that I've, you know, a lot of Democrats appreciate about him. He's a total asshole. I would never want to speak to him in person because he would be a dickwad to me.
Yeah.
He does work with the Democrats there. He has to because there's Democrats in his state, but he's liked by a lot of the Democrats. He's a good working relationship.
Well, he and Cory Booker are like besties. They're
making
YouTube videos together.
There's a reason that
he
was willing to be seen with Obama after Sandy. And it's because he knows the importance of reaching across the aisle when he absolutely has to. He's pigheaded and horrible, and all of his policies are stupid. but just the impression that he would even that he's able to exist in that world is enough, I think, for voters in New Jersey to feel like they're voting for someone who's not going to just take down the state.
Right. Well, and Ed Gillespie sort of brought up a good point. He's like a big Republican strategist and works on like all the sort of big campaigns and stuff. And he said basically was that, you know, he proved, if nothing else, that those votes with some of those, you know, communities, African-Americans, Hispanics, women, are actually in play.
Right.
You know, like, so maybe he won't be the president. Maybe he can't get out of the primaries. Who knows? I mean,
those are all true statements that you're making.
Exactly. But, I mean, like, he sort of, you can at least, if you're a Republican, sort of take away that those people will vote for you.
Right. That there is a way to get those people to vote for you. But I would argue that that way, especially as someone who, you know, holds a lot of the extreme, the conservative social positions that he holds.
Yeah.
You have to do it by working with Democrats.
Yeah.
You don't get that. You don't get those votes by just being obstructionist the way that the Republicans are here.
Right.
It's interesting to see what will happen because he's about to become the head of the Republican Governors Association.
Yes.
And not only will that be sort of interesting to see how that affects his presidential ambitions, because that will help him kind of build bridges across states.
Yes.
But it will be interesting to see what kind of effect he has. He's like enemy number one for a lot of Tea Party Republicans.
Yes, he is.
He's sort of at the center of this culture war that's going on in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole school of Republicans who want nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to see if they end up embracing him or if the Republican Governors Association ends up embracing, because a lot of those people are governors.
Yeah.
Ends up embracing some of the positions that have gotten him elected in the first place in what is a very blue state.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
A bluer blue state.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bluer ones.
Yes.
But it's also maybe going to be tough because he made some deals with the Democrats in his first term that he's going to actually have to like deliver on now. He wanted to pay off the pensions.
Right.
They're going to have to make the payments in this term.
Yes.
Economists predict that that's not going to be possible.
Right.
So that's going to be tough. He's going to have to deal with the fact that he's forbidden by campaign rules from raising money from Wall Street.
Right.
They're trying to sort of claim that super PACs can raise the money for him, but his presidential run might be difficult if he's not allowed to raise money from Wall Street.
Right.
He's also going to continue to be himself.
that's his biggest
problem. Which is his biggest problem.
That's always been his biggest problem.
Is that he will be Chris Christie that whole time.
It's also, you know, one of his biggest strengths, too. But
in New Jersey.
I was going to say in New Jersey. And it just doesn't play in a national campaign.
And I was saying to everyone all week, I was like, you know, I can see how a vaguely conservative-ish, or someone who's moderate at least, who's a woman in New Jersey, could vote for Chris Christie.
Yeah.
Because when someone calls you sweetheart in a patronizing tone in New Jersey, you give the attitude right back to them, and that's how everyone sort of communicates there. I've often said, and I'll just keep saying it, like, old ladies in Iowa are going to be scandalized by that kind of attitude.
Well, see,
they're
that's
not
the
used
thing.
To that hard-hitting.
And he's not, you know, one of these evangelical Christian wackadoos either. I mean, like, he has problems in early states. I mean, he has problems in Iowa. He has problems in South Carolina.
I think he probably has problems in New Hampshire because in New Hampshire, everyone is all about just getting along. Like, they, part of the political culture in New Hampshire is all about compromise. They had that weird moment where they were all Tea Partiers and they were shooting each other in the house or whatever they were up to.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they sort of govern with consensus in New Hampshire. Right. It's a really boring state. And
they don't like being bullied.
They don't like being bullied. They all have guns. Someone abrasive like Chris Christie isn't really going to fit into that kind of, like, sort of sedate kind of, you know, old-fashioned culture that they have.
Well, and he also just has, like, general problems with Republican primary voters, the, you know, the mouth-breathing knuckle-draggers.
Yeah, well, he's enemy number one for them. I mean, that's when,
That's who votes in the Republican primary.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not moderate voters, middle-ground voters. If the Republican primary were between him and, like, Hillary Clinton, then we'd have a race on our hands.
Exactly. Whose policies probably aren't that different from each other.
Very similar. Aside from the fact that she's, like, evolved a little on gay marriage, there and is a woman.
Right.
So she can't be, like, you know, pro-life.
She can't speak condescendingly to other women.
To other women. Well, she can. She doesn't, though.
No.
That's one... for all the things that we say about Hillary Clinton... I was also saying to Brent at lunch, and we're going to do a Hillary Pillory segment, but I don't want this to be in Hillary Pillory, because I want Hillary Pillory to make the point that we don't want her to be president.
Right.
I think that we need to separate her persona from her policy and from her political positioning.
We don't hate her as a person.
She's lovely. I've met her a few times. She's always been wonderful to me.
I haven't, but I'm sure she would be.
No, she's really nice in person, and she's... And I bet that if you had a meeting with her one-on-one about something, for example, if she was actually soliciting opinions from people in New York or California, which she never would be, that she would listen and she would react and be responsive and all of those things.
Yeah.
That is distinct from her political persona, because she doesn't seem nice in the political world. She doesn't, when she makes a speech, she seems mean.
Correct.
And Chris Christie might also be lovely in person. It seems like a lot of Democrats have good working relationships with him. Yeah. He must be kind of funny, at least.
Yeah.
But he can't speak to a crowd without making a woman feel shitty.
No.
So,
no.
Like, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And lastly, this was so good. We love a good secession movement around here. And we've been talking about the potential state of North Colorado. And that happened this week.
Yeah.
So all of the 11 counties... who had that on the ballot voted on this week, and six of them passed it.
Six of them passed it. It's certainly clear what's going to happen. That's a majority of them. But that just means that those six counties can now move forward with their quest for independence. It's unclear whether they want independence, being such a small...
The counties had these on there, and it was basically just sort of like, if they passed, it was... All it was doing was, like, giving permission to the counties to move forward with the state.
Right.
So it's like... Those votes meant nothing. I mean, they sort of, like, gave... No. All they did was, like, give a sort of, like, general permission.
To continue to try to be North Colorado. Right. Of course, in order to become North Colorado, Colorado itself would have to approve of the measure.
Not going
to
happen.
So that's not going to happen.
And then the U.S. Senate.
And the U.S. Senate, which isn't trying to care about that
certainly
at all.
Certainly not. Not right now, anyway.
No.
They're not trying...
Of course not.
They're not trying to give two more Senate votes to some
wackos.
Six counties in Nowheresville, Colorado, who are going to be, like, the... That shittiest of crazy people you can find.
Of course. Yeah. That we haven't had a new state since 1863. West Virginia is the last state that we broke off. Mm-hmm. But we talked about a bunch of old secession movements a while ago on the podcast. There are some fascinating ones.
Yeah.
West Virginia, the least fascinating of them, because there were some attempts being made to start states like Jefferson and Lincoln and a bunch of fake states that never existed, like all up and down.
North California.
I still am sort of like, California could be...
That was Jefferson, I think, wasn't it?
It was Jefferson. No, that might have been... That might have not just been Northern California. I think
it's Southern Oregon, too.
It was like a weird selection of Nowheresvilles in California and Oregon.
Yeah, it was.
Like a bunch of random places were trying to be a state.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, don't be a state.
But that was Jefferson, I think, right?
Yeah, I think was Jefferson. There was another one called Lincoln that was like on the East Coast or something.
Yeah, okay.
But in any case, it's an interesting... It's interesting because Colorado is politically a very interesting state.
Yes.
It's got... like the Denver and Boulder crowd.
Right.
And then it's got a bunch of fucking crazies.
Yeah.
Well, and this crazies, is sort of... that's the part of Colorado that, like, the polygamists live in and other crazies.
Right. Well, and we're seeing this in a lot of states, actually, because, like, the density in urban areas is sort of, like, going up in a lot of places. So, like, you have a place like Colorado who's sort of, like, the, you know, 99% of the land mass just doesn't, you know, have enough voters to sort of, like, override what Denver wants to do, sort of, which is great.
It's the Western Iowa of Colorado.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's the Nowheresville of Colorado.
Yeah, right.
It's a part of the state, though, that is really fantastically conservative. And Colorado is, in certain ways, a very conservative state because it's very frontiersman mentality-ish. Right. You know, that's why they're having all of... they love their guns in Colorado. But yeah. They also have towns in Colorado. Colorado Springs, at one point, privatized, like, streetlights.
Yeah.
So that each block had to pay for their own streetlight service, so poor neighborhoods just couldn't have lights anymore. Like, things like that are going on in Colorado. So there's some interesting political sort of culture wars going on in Colorado, and this is, I think, a product of that.
Well, and they've been having, like, big gun wars there, too, because they have the have the legislature, and they just passed a bunch of gun laws, and everybody sort of, like, flew off the handle because they sort of...
Meanwhile, they've had, like, all... like, most of the most high-profile major shootings in the last
where you go to do
20 years have been in Colorado.
Yeah.
Although, there was a shooting, this is unrelated, I'm bringing it up, in at the Bryant Park ice skating rink.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that earlier, so that's crazy.
Like, yesterday.
Yeah.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Scary, too. Because some of us like to ice skate.
I know. I've skated there.
Yeah. No, it's... anyone who's wonderful has skated there. That's how you know people are wonderful. They also agreed in Colorado to put a tax on pot. Now that they've legalized why not?
That's a great plan.
Why else legalize it?
That's a good form of revenue.
That's why you legalize anything. So you can tax it.
Exactly.
That's why a lot of drugs, you know... I mean, I'm not for a lot of drugs being legalized, but that's why those arguments get made. It's not really about the safety of the drugs. Obviously, you regulate them.
Yeah.
It's about the tax money.
Yeah.
And tax that shit.
Yeah.
Tax everything. Screw it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm against sales tax in most circumstances. But I'm sort of like, whatever. I'm in favor of sales tax on cigarettes.
Sure.
I want it to be 190%.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in favor of sales tax on pot or anything that is sort of like vaguely not good for you.
Sure.
Like, why not?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
And pay for treatment programs so people can stop using those things with the money.
Yeah.
And or schools.
I like it.
All things.
Good work.
Yes.
You solved that problem.
I'm a policy expert over here. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's the return of gay news.
It's been a while. Yeah.
It was basically all we were talking about on the podcast for a while.
I know.
You were not happy about it. You were okay with it.
I mean, I was okay with it.
Right.
It was a lot of gay news.
It was a lot of gay news.
But we had sort of reached a point where, like, a bunch of... The states that you would expect to pass gay marriage did it.
Right.
Everyone was sort of up to what they were up to. Other states that were you would expect to hate gay marriage continued to hate it.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, at a certain point, we're going to, like... get to the end of what we're going to be able to do. Because at a certain point, we're just going to be left with sort of like...
like Mississippi.
Well, Mississippi hasn't legalized gay marriage yet. Like, and then it's just sort of like, well, then just don't be gay living in Mississippi.
Move,
like, you've got 40 other options that are all probably better off anyway.
Well, don't be living in Mississippi, period.
Well...
don't do it.
That's... yeah.
Leave... if you're not gay, leave too. Because not just... I mean, you could end up being gay one day.
It's
and then
very pretty there.
Well, I'm sure it's pretty. It's the same reason... you don't move full-time to West Virginia.
Yeah, exactly.
We were just talking yesterday about... it's the most beautiful state in the Union.
Yeah.
Everyone can agree on that who's been there. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You wouldn't live there, though.
No.
You're not going to live there. That's not a place to live.
Gross.
It's terrible.
No.
No, but you could visit.
Yeah,
you would want to.
We're going to go to the cabin.
Yeah, we're going to go to the cabin.
I decided this last night.
Yeah, we're going to Mississippi. I mean, not Mississippi. We're going to West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia.
We are not going to Mississippi.
No.
Brent's been to Mississippi.
Been there.
I've chosen not to go to Mississippi.
Yeah. So gay news.
Gay news.
The Senate passed the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, ENDA. They've
like,
been
finally.
Trying to pass it forever. It was like Ted Kennedy's sort of like thing.
I was going to say cause celeb, but I guess that's
whatever. Sure.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
So he sort of like handed it off to Jeff Merkley and was like, get this thing passed. And so
that seemed like a suspect handoff if ever there was one.
I don't know what he was thinking there, but I mean, what was he going to do? I mean, he couldn't really pass
it. He had to hand it off to somebody.
He had to hand it off to somebody. So, but it passed 64 to 32, so it was fairly bipartisan. There were 10 Republicans, I think, right?
They were the ones that you would expect.
Not all of them.
Except for, I was going to say, there were some exciting surprises.
Yes.
Most high profile among them, Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake is surprising sometimes.
He is surprising sometimes. I sort of don't hate him as much as I feel like maybe I mean, he's not great,
he's
certainly,
not great.
But it was funny. I was talking to my mom, and she lives in Arizona, and she sort of has been giving Flake and McCain a lot of grief over sort of just like various things. And she's like, she's being real active lately, which I'm very much in favor of. But she said, she was like, I should probably call his office and say I'm glad that he passed that. And I was like, well.
You should.
Maybe you should.
Yeah.
Do it.
You should do that.
Yeah.
You should let them know that that's the correct thing to
be
doing.
But Orrin Hatch, I don't necessarily expect him to be on this list,
you know,
really.
What this list is, though, is the list is sort of like old-line Republicans. And I think the old-line Republicans, after seeing what happened with the Ted Cruz-style Republicans, you know, they've got a few of those people now in, you know, they've got the Rand Pauls, they've got Tim Scott, they've got a bunch of, like, crazies now.
Yeah, it was the establishment,
voted for it. Because you see
John McCain's on the list, Rob Portman's on the list, Pat Toomey is on the list.
You know, and it's, you know, like, Susan Collins and Kelly Ayotte and those kinds of people. Right. Like, they can be
And Mark Kirk, who's from Illinois, right, and Kirk. Illinois just passed it as well. So
it's, and, you know, Lisa Murkowski, who was on the outs with the far, you know, the far right on her party, of her party for a long time. It's sort of like people who I think have realized that in order to continue to exist as a party, they're going to need to kind of amend their position on gay rights. It's also people who have been in the political game long enough to see that they're losing on this issue and kind of like,
well, and also, like I said to my mom too, I think to a certain degree in Jeff Flake's case, he was just elected in 2012, right? Wasn't 12? He elected? Yeah, he was elected. He was just elected.
Was that when
he
got
this last?
Oh, because because what's-his-face
and the,
left.
Yeah, and the Senate terms are for six years.
Yeah,
so I also I think that he probably also realizes that in, you know, 2018, probably people aren't going to give two shits about whether he voted for ENDA or not.
Well, so, and as we've said many times, he's in a state that's slowly going blue.
Yeah,
he's got to figure his shit out, and he's someone who in the past has had some positions that he's broken with his own party on.
Yes,
you know, he's I have talked to him because I wrote an article for a magazine down there about his opposition to the embargo with Cuba.
And
you know, that's a position that I would argue is very pro-business, but it's not popular within his own party for political reasons, and he's somebody who has in the past sort of like found issues that he is willing to kind of like break with them on.
Yeah. But of course, this is going nowhere.
Well, it's not
going
to right. The House has to pass it to go somewhere.
It's going to go to the pile where the immigration bill is currently sitting, basically.
It's a secret pile where all the bills are sitting, except for the repeal Obamacare bill.
Right, because John Boehner thinks it's his job to not pass bills.
That's what he believes his responsibility
is. This is going to go in the not pass bills pile. Do not pass pile.
Reed, though, has been all over the airwaves saying that he's pretty sure that Boehner's not going to bring it up for a vote because it will pass.
Right. Which it would.
Which it would.
It totally would. There's enough Republicans to vote with all of the Democrats on that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
What do they need? Don't they only need like 20 or something like that to vote with them?
They only need a few. And also, given the way that the votes broke down to end the shutdown, I feel like there are probably 85 members of the House that are kind of like, fuck you guys.
I know.
I'll do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah, totally.
And come from districts where this is not going to harm them and know that this is sort of like the key to them remaining relevant.
Yeah.
This is how you remain relevant to like young voters and shit like that.
I know, right?
Like if they want to have young voters in their corner and they're not going to work with the Democrats, this is the kind of policy that they should be actively supporting.
Yeah. Well, and that's what Reed sort of said. He was like, if they know sort of what's good for them, then they'll get to passing this.
Hawaii also passed gay marriage.
Yeah, they did just yesterday, actually.
So I was surprised to find that Illinois had not yet passed gay marriage.
Yeah.
I'm starting to forget the states that haven't done it. Because it's now seeming like all the states you would need have done it.
There's 16 now, which is, you think about sort of,
When you think about how many states you would actually want to live in.
When it was very recently, we started at zero. We can all remember when we were at zero.
This happened quickly, and this is sort of like the most influential states are doing it.
Yeah.
So the least influential states will follow. They're currently not states that I'm trying to live in that don't have gay marriage. You know, like,
sure.
So, and they're currently not states with like massive gay populations that don't have gay marriage. There's crap states that don't have gay marriage, and like those states are crappy. But at some point, they're going to have to like figure their shit out.
Right.
You know? Like all the big ones are now covered.
Yeah.
I did not realize that Chicago didn't.
Well, what I don't think that straight people realize is that you, as a straight person, don't want to live in a state where only other straight people live.
Well, yes, exactly.
And I don't think they'll realize that until all the gays are gone.
Yeah, they won't know.
And then they'll be like, this place is a fucking hellhole. And you'll realize it's because you ran all the gays out.
Yeah, that's what will happen. Well, and with the gays, we'll go 10% of your children, too. I mean, like, it's not going to be great for these, like, small towns where it's suddenly their teenagers are comfortable coming out, but only if they leave home.
Right, exactly.
For them to be, like, hating gays all left, right, and center.
No, that's not going to work out.
You know, some people still love their children when they're gay, and they don't want their sons to move to California.
Right.
Or, like, my mom is so furious that I've moved to California.
I know.
I can't imagine if I were from a small town that she had no hope of getting me back to, what she would be up to.
Yeah.
Shenanigans, most likely.
Yeah.
Some real shenanigans.
So anyway, that's the gay news.
That's the gay news.
So
we had some finally. Oh, now healthcare news.
Healthcare news.
We've had a lot of that.
Yeah, we've had a lot of that. Right. Not real as Violet and I were discussing before this,
not
we were
real
like,
news.
When do we talk about this? Because it's not so much news as it is sort of just like a story thing that people were talking about. But Obama apologized to the people who are getting kicked off of their health insurance plans, because the whole last couple weeks have just been really everybody just like
blowing
like beating him over the head with this, basically.
This is a fake news story, if ever I've heard of a fake news story.
Well, right.
As I mean, we said this before, but like, no one loves their insurance.
Nobody loves
people only love their insurance if their choice is to get worse insurance. As long as they have a better option, no one feels loyal to their insurance.
Right. And we've also discussed that the majority of these people, most everybody thinks, are going to be able to get cheaper insurance on the exchanges anyway.
They don't know it.
Which is the problem, and that's why he's apologizing. And there are a few fixes that people are suggesting, and one of them is that they actually sort of let these people keep their plans until January. Yeah. Sort of like there isn't a gap where they don't have a plan, basically.
Well, and I think that should be law.
I think so, too. Like, you shouldn't get kicked off your insurance plan and then not be able to get another plan or not know, like, what plan you can get and then just, like, not have insurance for a while. Like, that's not fair.
That's not a thing.
No.
So that, I think they should do regardless.
Yes.
They also want to basically, like, pass legislation that forces insurance companies to keep offering plans that people still want.
Right. And that, I don't think that may pass the House, and it may get a couple losers in the Senate to vote for it. I don't think that would get signed.
I don't think it would, because
that opens up a whole can of worms. Like, the whole point of sort of, like, making these plans sort of, robust enough was that they were going to get rid of some of these. I mean, these are sinker plans that don't cover things
that are mandated.
Right. And those are things that bring down sort of, you're not bringing down the cost of healthcare if you still have these people who are on these plans that don't cover anything that then still have to, like, pay thousands and thousands of dollars that they're not paying when they go to the hospital, basically. I mean, like, you're not helping the system with these plans.
Part of what's not really getting enough play, I think, in this discussion is the fact that most of these plans are getting cut because they don't meet the new requirements of the law. They're not getting cut because insurance companies are haphazardly cutting plans left, right, and center.
No.
It's because they don't cover things they're supposed to cover.
Right.
You know? And ultimately, in the long run, what you want is for everyone to be able to afford a plan that covers everything, not for people to pay a slightly less to have a plan that doesn't cover anything and have that sort of affect the cost of the other plans.
Right.
You know, the way that the competition is going to bring costs down is only going to work if all the plans offer everything that you need.
Right.
Because currently you can buy a catastrophic health plan that doesn't cover anything for not very much money at all.
Yeah.
But it doesn't cover anything.
Right, exactly.
It's not bringing healthcare costs down. You're just paying money to nothing. You're just paying free money to a healthcare. It's a really genius racket to be in, actually.
Yeah, right.
Because you just get people to just pay you money every month to not really do anything.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is hire a lawyer on your end to reject all of their claims.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's genius.
It's genius.
Yeah.
If only I had thought of it.
I know, right?
Things that are not genius.
Jobs numbers,
because they're fake.
They're fake.
Even the news, when they were reporting this on, like, CBS or wherever, or ABC, wherever we were watching this.
Yeah.
The guy that they were interviewing about it was like, well, these are the supposed job numbers. I say supposed because they never are what they say
they're never
they
right.
are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they expect, who knows, they'll probably get rounded down.
I was going to say,
because
this is going to get cut in half.
Yeah, because the economists who were surveyed, like, were expecting 120,000 jobs to be added, and supposedly we added 204,000 jobs.
Well, that's a random number.
Which is more than we've been adding recently.
And
also, like,
this is in the throes of the shutdown.
This is in the throes of the shutdown. Like, these are wrong.
This is not
obviously
correct.
They just couldn't be any more wrong. We know
that
they're wrong. Just hold off. Also, I just don't understand why you release the numbers when you have to go back and, like, fix them the next month. Like,
couldn't we release them 2 months after?
Like, 2 months job. Like,
we could. The answer is that we could.
We could. I know.
We're not going to, but we could.
Yeah. The other thing that's the unemployment rate is now at 7.3%. Which also could be wrong.
Right. That's and that was about on track for what they thought it would be.
Yeah.
But people are still leaving the job market. I mean, the labor force. But the unemployment rate is sort of like a fake thing now anyway, because so many people have been unemployed for so long.
Yeah.
And there was a spike in the number of people who have been temporarily laid off.
Right.
So that's considered part of the sort of government shutdown situation. They revised last month's numbers for September.
Higher,
of course.
And August is higher.
Yeah, August is up to 238.
That just really keeps ticking right on up there.
Yeah, that I think August, when they first reported it, was like 140 or something like that.
There was actually about the jobs numbers. There was an interesting anecdote, and I know we're going to talk about Game Change later, but there was a jobs numbers anecdote in there, because they were sort of like one of the first part of the book is sort of just like the flailings of the whole first Obama administration, which they make sound like it was a big, giant, four-year, like, mess.
Of course they do. They're dramatic.
They're dramatic, which is what you love about that book. But anyway, apparently there was one, and I don't even remember this, but there was a jobs report. Like, the president loved getting that, like, whenever it came out. Like, he wanted to see it or whatever. And, like, he would always guess what it was or whatever. And one month, sort of when he was, like, in, I think it was, like, 2010 or 11 or whatever, it was zero.
Oh, my God.
And he was, like, zero. Like, he said, like, to whoever it was he was talking to who'd given him the report, that he wished that it had been, like, a net loss.
Right.
Because he just felt like the zero was sort of, like, a sign of, like, his whole administration just being, like, a giant goose egg.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, exactly. Like, negative 1,000 would have, like,
something's happening in the economy that we can explain.
It's bad. We need to fix this. But zero is just sort of, like, that's just depressing. Right?
Going on. Like,
nothing happened.
God. Yeah. Zero.
I know.
That's really...
Isn't that great? But that was also wrong, too.
Right. Well, sure, of course it was.
That was revised up or down by 10,000 the end of the next month.
100,000 so. Even. A million. Nobody knows.
No.
They're fake.
Nobody knows. Yeah.
In any case, this week we have something really exciting that we've done. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You may remember that a few weeks ago, we brought our friend Erica Barden on the show to just sit in with us and talk about whatever we were talking about.
Yep.
She is really into sports. She used to do sports reporting. And Brent is really into sports.
Yeah.
So a few weeks after that, I was talking to her, and she was like, what if we did a sports segment? And I was like, if you are willing to explain to me what you know about sports.
I couldn't have been more excited.
Brent was super excited. I was like, you will have to tell me what I need to know for this segment. This can be a segment of you telling me what I need to know. But I don't know anything about sports. So she took us up on the challenge. So she came by earlier today, and we had a little sit-down about sports. We're going to put the first 10 minutes on here, and if you want to listen to the rest of our discussion, which went on for about like 45 minutes or an hour, then we're going to post that separately, and you can download that at our website. So go forth and sport.
So this is a segment that I'm really excited about. We've talked sort of just about it before when there's been appropriate news to talk about, but we're going to talk about sports.
I'm nervous about this. Skeptical, at best. But we have my friend Erica here, who's been on the podcast before.
Yes.
You may remember her from an earlier just sit-in with us.
Sports expert.
Yeah, and she's going to be our resident sport expert.
Wow, I don't usually title myself that, but I'm excited to today. And you should be nervous.
Compared to Lila, we are both sports experts.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't like to be in a room full of people where I know the least about something.
Yeah, you should have definitely worn, like, verbal knee pads.
Right.
Shoulder pads and a helmet.
I'm mentally prepared, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not, but I could.
Yeah, but it was a good week for sports news, sort of, anyway. At least just even being kind of, like, in the, you know, out there.
In the ether.
Yes, in the ether.
I didn't follow any of it, so I'm counting on you guys.
I think it's actually great that you didn't follow it, because we can kind of give you a recap and see what your natural reaction to what happened is.
Yeah.
Will it be apathy? That's often a reaction.
For one of them, I hope not. For one of the main stories, I hope not.
Okay, good. Let's dive in.
Okay, all right. Go ahead.
I mean, I think we got to start. We got to start with, what's the opposite of indiscreet, obvious, unfiltered, loose cannon? Anything come to mind?
A word or a person?
A word.
Oh, like, well, discreet?
If you're undercover,
sure.
Incognito, does that work for you?
Yeah.
So
there you go, Richie Incognito.
Incognito.
That's his name. That's a football player.
That's an option for a name, apparently.
Incognito.
That's like, isn't there a basketball player with a funny name? That's like something.
Meta World Peace.
Yeah. I've heard of him because one of my coworkers watches basketball at work. Mm-hmm.
You didn't
hear that from me.
Yeah. I mean, his name is Meta World Peace.
Yeah. Anyway, Richie Incognito.
Yes.
So he left his teammate, Jonathan Martin, a voicemail that I actually got the transcript. I'm going to just use expletive so you can actually air this podcast. Hey, what's up, you half expletive piece of expletive? I saw you on Twitter. You've been training 10 weeks, all expletive in your expletive mouth. I'm going to slap your expletive mouth. I'm going to slap your real mother across the face. Laughter. Expletive, you're still a rookie. I'll kill you.
Oh, yeah. Death threats. Uh-huh. Awesome.
Yeah, that's it.
This is a teammate of his.
Yes, they're teammates.
Oh.
They're apparently bros, too.
Now, could this have been like a thing that they do where they threaten to kill each other in a friendly manner in which... Well, that really means I love you?
Supposedly how this started was, my understanding is that Jonathan Martin had not gone to a few, like, optional team workouts. And everyone sort of, like, knows that optional is code for you must go.
You better get there.
Because they're kind of, like, in the off-season, so whatever. Right. So I think the coaches had asked Incognito to sort of, like, because Jonathan Martin, it's only his second year. Right. And that's why this sort of, like, you're still a rookie remark came in. To sort of, like... get him kind of, like, back in the fold and sort of, like, energized and, like, sort of, you know, basically, like, continue hazing him.
So he that's immediately happened, went with basically. Death threats.
So he went with death threats.
There were not also, only to him, but also potentially to his mother.
Right. Yeah. Who is not involved, as far as I know. Yeah.
But there has... It's just brought about an interesting conversation because there are a lot of people who have sort of, like, sided with Richie Incognito in the sense that, like, this is just football, this is what guys do, this is hazing, like, this is, you're only a second year, like, and there has been sort of, like, you know, the people who have really
this
been,
is
like...
part of the brotherhood culture.
Oh.
Because yes. we usually give our siblings death threats.
Right, death threats, right, yeah.
Yeah, of course, that's well, we wouldn't know. Fred and I are... Well-known only children.
Yeah.
It's actually, I probably have given my sister when I was younger a death threat. Yeah. I wouldn't be
when
surprised.
You were younger.
Yeah, but not as an adult in a professional setting.
And as somebody who could legitimately carry out a death threat because you're a professional athlete and ostensibly, and have the last name Incognito, which adds a new layer, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I mean, he already, with that name, had such a target on his back, like... You cannot be sending death threats to people with that name.
No, you can't.
If your name is like Ben Smith,
right?
Send a death threat.
No one's gonna care. So what happened was, so he was suspended, and it was this big hullabaloo in the NFL, and you know, obviously, it brings about conversations of racism and hazing and bullying.
White. Jonathan Martin is black.
That little part of that the news story was important.
Yeah.
And I think the latest news that's happening is that Incognito and fellow teammates are coming out, you know, supporting him. He has apologists out there saying that this is just part of, you know, like we said, the culture.
What they do.
The environment, what they do. I recently met a friend of mine who's from the South, met her aunt, and she used the term coloreds. So,
classic.
But apparently that's just what they do in the South. So that's so okay.
Maybe. Yeah, of course.
It's been interesting because there has sort of been an element of not just race, but Jonathan Martin is also, he went to Stanford. He's very intelligent. And there has been sort of like this kind of like, whether
and
there's
black.
There's well, I know there's been this whole sort of element about
amazing.
Like with
there's almost like a like, classist
sort of like thing. Like, is there and also just sort of like within like is he there's the whole thing of like is he black enough, you know, sort of like, you know,
oh,
at
sure.
least in terms of like, you know, people who are playing football. There's just been a lot of like weird sort of elements, like, you know, deeper than just sort of like, you know,
the teammate with a death threat.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah. I mean, he and Obama could actually share a lot of notes.
Yeah, exactly. He's been having...
death threats and not being black enough, or being too black.
Yeah, yes.
Is there an element of football culture that is sort of, I don't want to say anti-education, but kind of determined on... Because I know that a lot of football players get, like, scholarships. That's, you know, they get noticed because they get scholarships to go to schools that have good football teams. But is there sort of, like, a kind of... A little bit of a little bit of an issue with like people who went to like schools like Stanford versus people who went to like state schools. Or,
well, I think that is sort of like at least I don't know that has necessarily like specifically come up in this argument, but it's a thing that like people have sort of like
an undercurrent.
An undercurrent.
Unless you're a quarterback. unless you're a quarterback.
Right.
So, because that's...
What do quarterbacks do?
It's it's considered to be, requires a certain level of intelligence. And I would say that anyone, no matter who you are, would back that up.
Sure.
Just what you have to do as a quarterback.
Right.
You have to not only have, you have to have intelligence just generally, and then you have to have a very, very high football IQ because of everything that you are manning at once.
Right.
Pardon the pun.
We went on for quite a while after that, so if you want to hear the rest of our conversation, it's available at www.braintrustlive.com, or you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher.
So we've also got some international news this week, our favorite thing, as you know. So there have been some big high-level talks with, like, some, you know, the world's, like, major countries to try and get a deal to get Iran to stop their nuclear program. So we're talking with Iran. They were direct talks.
This is exciting. In some ways, because we haven't been doing a lot of that.
Right, and the Iranians sort of, like, had even kind of, like, led people to believe that there was a real potential deal that could be made. So a lot of people were excited about this, and people got even more excited about it when sort of, just the other day, John Kerry, like, cut a trip short and, like, went to join the talks, like, personally.
Yeah.
So everybody was sort of like, something's going to get done. No.
Not true.
That's not what happened at
nothing
all.
Nothing got done.
Nothing got done. Nobody decided anything.
If you're wondering if there's news about Iran and its nuclear weapons program, the answer is no.
No.
The news is that there's no news.
It's still ongoing.
They think that they're going to sort of start having lower-level talks again. It's not like the talks are over. There wasn't, like, a big dramatic moment.
And supposedly they made, like, big headway, and, like, everybody sort of, like, felt really good about them and all sorts of,
it wasn't as depressing as many of the headlines would lead you to believe. It sounded like something had really fallen apart.
Right.
That wasn't really what happened. Things didn't go anywhere, per se. John Kerry may have been a little bit a little early in his, run over to Iran. But they sort of, there wasn't like a big moment where everything fell apart. It was just that like things didn't work out.
I feel like John Kerry should have just stayed out of it because when he starts arriving at things, his face makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're really uncomfortable.
Looking at him.
Looking at him makes them uncomfortable. He has had plastic surgery that we cannot identify. He's looking more like a potato every day. I don't know why.
I don't either.
Every moment he looks more like a cartoon potato head.
Oh, he's just so weird looking.
So weird looking. And he's gotten weirder looking.
Weirder. Like almost daily. It's like every time he's on TV, it's like, what are you doing to yourself?
Yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah.
Somebody knows. Somebody online knew, but I didn't read the article, so it's hard for me to know what they knew.
But anyway, it was interesting because, like, supposedly, you know, obviously, you know, there were sort of, like, parts of the deal that the Iranians didn't like, and, you know, I mean, there was, you know, obvious the things that you would sort of want to discuss when you're having a deal, but there were apparently a lot of issues, like, with the countries who were trying to strike the deal with Iran that they couldn't sort of agree
when
on
they
either.
Had, supposedly they had Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China in there. Like, some
supposedly France was being the one that was sort of like the
Well,
sticker.
I am not surprised to hear that.
I'm not surprised.
They're sticklers
about that
over
either.
There. Yeah. They don't kid around.
Yeah.
And once you're getting, like, Britain, France, and Germany into a room together, like, you never know what's going to happen.
No, exactly.
Nothing good.
And Iran.
And like, Russia.
Yeah.
And China. Like, that's, I mean, I get that those are like, Security Council countries.
That's it.
But, like, there's a reason that all of them are on that council, and it's because they're all a bunch of sticklers.
Right. And, of course, in classic, it makes me think that the Americans came up with this plan, because it's a classic sort of, like, let's deal with it later plan.
Yeah.
Because the plan was for Iran to freeze its nuclear program for up to 6 months to allow negotiations on a longer-term agreement. Sort of like what we've been doing with our budget for, like, the last 6 years.
That's a plan that we are familiar with.
Right, exactly. Let's move it until the time where we have to have a crisis about it.
Right. And once we have the crisis, nothing will get done, and we'll just let the crisis happen.
Right, exactly.
That's what we'll do.
Yeah.
That's been our plan so far. Here's some advice to those other countries.
Yeah.
It hasn't been working here.
We're not doing it right.
It's not going to work internationally.
Do not let us lead this.
Don't listen to us. We're not giving you good advice.
No.
Somebody else must have a plan. I bet the French, for all of their annoyingness, have a plan of some sort.
Probably.
The plan probably involves doing something, which is why it's not getting done. That's why everyone's calling them sticklers. They're, like, probably there with a plan that involves steps.
Right.
And we're there with a plan that just involves
nobody was interested in that.
Making a plan.
I know. Whoa. Wait a minute.
This is a little
here.
Preemptive.
Let's not jump into anything.
What if we agreed that in 6 months we would come up with a plan again?
Right. Bring the same plan back to us in 6 months.
And we'll think about it a little. But then in 6 months, we won't be sure yet. We'll need some thinking time after that.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
In other sort of international news, but this is not that international.
But this is, I love this news, sort of. I mean, I hate it because it's upsetting.
I
know.
This is coming just in time for us to maybe hopefully stop talking about Benghazi.
I hope that this is sort of like the end of this. Benghazi. I don't know that it will be, but I mean...
There never seems to be one. So.
Anyway, there was a big sort of like bombastic news story on 60 Minutes very recently where they had a guy on who worked for a British security company. Right, who was guarding the embassy, the compound in Libya. Right. So he had, has written a book.
Right.
And they used him as a source on their show to talk. He claimed that he had, like, scaled the wall to the embassy to, like, go in and, like, you know, try and save everyone. And that he had seen, what's his name?
He had seen the ambassador in a hospital.
Christopher Stevens, like, had seen him in the hospital. And sort of, like, he, you know, had sort of went on 60 Minutes to say all these things.
Right.
Well,
wasn't there.
He wasn't actually there. He was at his beachside villa or something like that, wasn't he? Like,
and Fox News picked up the story.
Right.
So there was more, it was just like one of those moments where it was like.
Well, he was sort of like the main person who was like saying that like the help wasn't coming when it was supposed to. And like all of the things that sort of like all the Benghazi sort of like, you know.
Conspiracy theorists have been
coming up with have sort of been coming for him because Fox has actually used him for a lot of their reporting on this too.
Yeah.
So basically what had happened is he had testified to something completely different than what he told 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
And sort of like Washington Post and the New York Times like found out about this and started reporting about it. And so
he had told the FBI something different than he was telling 60 Minutes.
Yeah, he never even went to the compound.
He never even went to the compound. And so because of this he's got like the entire sort of like underlying story that was allowing Fox News and in sort of indirectly CBS News to question the Obama administration's not just response, but their account of the events
has
been called into question.
Right. So he was lying.
He was lying.
About all of that.
So most of Benghazi, we can now agree that Obama, the administration's account of the events is correct.
Right. We had also agreed that this wasn't an actual news story. Before this.
Right.
So now I feel like we can really discount
it. We can really just lay this to rest.
It's still a tragedy.
It's a tragedy.
But it is not.
It remains a tragedy without.
Right. But it is not a thing to continue to care about. No. Exactly.
Just a thing. It's a sad thing that happened.
Yeah. So, but the president of CBS News had to apologize. Yeah. Laura Logan, who did like the main reporting on it, had to apologize. They've had to retract it.
You know who has not apologized?
Fox News. No, standing by all of their reporting on this.
Yeah.
Which is not shocking because they're not really dealing in facts.
No, they don't care about the facts.
They don't. I mean, it doesn't matter to them.
No.
Right.
They can stand by anything they want.
Yeah.
They can stand by us living on Mars for all they know. They don't know.
Yeah. And also, I have a feeling like the people who are watching Fox News like are also probably not knowing that this CBS News now was like has been retracted because they probably
think they're certain.
CBS News is just the lamestream media anyway. I mean.
Yeah, they would be, I think, a little bit horrified to find that Fox News for a while was reporting the same news as 60 Minutes.
Oh, right, I know.
And, you know.
Yeah.
Now they're probably, if anything would cause them to call their understanding of the events into question, it would be that it had been reported by real media.
Right, I know, exactly. And last of the
international news, an enormous typhoon struck the Philippines, and shit's just, like, falling apart.
A crazy typhoon. I mean, 10,000 people are dead. Yeah. I mean, it's just
like a shit show over there.
It's terrible. The accounts are sort of like that there's bodies hanging from trees and just, like, scattered through the streets. I mean, it really just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was one of the biggest typhoons on record. There were 150-mile winds. There were giant waves. And it was just, I mean, it's terrible. Crazy. If you see some of the pictures, it's like, holy
crap. Yeah.
Man. And there's so many islands down there, too. Like, they were talking about, like, how, like, a lot of the communications between the islands sort of, like, went out. And so, like, people didn't know what was happening, like, on the other islands.
Right,
and they didn't know how many people were dead. And they didn't know how
to progressing, couldn't get through
move,
the people.
Right, exactly. So it was just that it was a huge mess. And
Yeah. And nothing political has happened.
No.
In the wake of it.
No.
We're hoping somebody is talking about global warming.
Because yeah, I know. That's what I said at lunch.
Like, we're not just having like.
Oh, we have to talk about that typhoon. Does anybody saying blaming that on global warming? But I mean, that's sort of
science, probably
right.
Is.
And science probably
we can
is.
Imagine.
Yes. So
and
anyway,
this very inexpertly leads us into what we've been waiting for
the
whole time.
It was a great segue.
Yeah.
Game change.
Game change.
Double down.
Double down.
I'm reading this at a rate that is while still slow, very fast for me. Because I've really been reading it at, like, moments where I would normally just be watching television or some dumb show, like, on Hulu while I was, like, lying in bed.
Yeah.
So I even read it on the treadmill the other day.
Like reading on the treadmill. That's hard.
That hurts to do. I'm still only, like, a third of the way through it. But
I'm waiting until Brent gets to a good point, and then I'm going to read it in 2 days, and then we'll...
Right, I know. She said yesterday, she was like, I'm going to catch up with you before the podcast tomorrow. I was like, I'm on page 200. She was like, yeah, I know.
I didn't start
it,
though.
You couldn't, because we had quite a night
last
night.
We had quite a night last night.
Anyway.
But yeah, Brent has been reading at work a little bit, and IMing me...
over lunch.
Over
at
lunch.
My desk.
But he's been IMing me revelations.
Yes.
As he sort of scans the
so
pages
far,
and fell down.
The biggest revelation that we haven't covered, because some of them were leaked before the book came
right.
out, is that Joe Biden's middle name is Robinette.
Robinette. You heard that correctly.
That's...
As somebody with an unusual middle name, I can, you know, I can I can sort of sympathize with him.
That's what I've taken away from the book so
far. We've talked a lot about it.
Yeah, we have.
That's not just a name that sounds suspiciously female, but
right.
it's a name that sounds suspiciously weird.
Very.
Robinette.
Yes. But as I mentioned, sort of like the first part of the book, which I'm now through, was like the sort of... It did really sound, and like you said, they're dramatic. But I mean, like, you know, he had a lot of people, like, in supposedly, like, his inner circle, like, leaking things to the press. He went through a few different press secretaries. There was sort of, like, a lot of everybody hated Valerie Jarrett. And there were a lot of issues
right.
with sort of, like, people not really loving Michelle. And she was sort of, like, you know, I mean, there was just, like, all of the things that I'm sure probably happen in most administrations. But, you know... doesn't make it less fascinating to read about in a way that like makes it seem like a gossip.
We would like this book to be written about every election that's ever happened and local minor elections.
Yeah, I mean, it really, they do such a good job because it really does just sort of like read like a fast-paced, kind of like salacious, just gossip rag, basically. Yeah. So, and I'm now to the portion where he sort of like is going through all of the Republicans who either did run or were thinking about running and didn't. And that's been fairly interesting, too, because there were a few Republicans who, like, everybody sort of really, really, really thought were going to run. Haley Barbour being one of them.
Right.
And Mike Huckabee being the other, that sort of, like, got out for, like, sort of interesting reasons.
Yeah.
So, Haley Barbour, because he's an alcoholic and has sort of, you know, various issues on... He has some... race issues. He sort of talked about, and a lot of some of the Southerners sort of like felt like a Southerner was not going to be able to be the first black president, which they may have been right about, which probably is one of the reasons.
Well,
as it turned out,
a Republican was not going to be able to
be the first
black president.
Well, the right Republican probably
could have, but not one of the ones they had
right.
on option.
But Mike Huckabee, his main reason was that because supposedly he was always aiming more toward 2016.
Right.
But then sort of like got talked into sort of like exploring it again. The reason that he didn't do it is because he was literally broke.
Oh, interesting.
Needed, like they had like taken out like a bunch of second mortgages on their house for like his first run. Like, I mean, he basically wasted every dime. And that's the reason that he took that job on Fox News.
Oh, God.
Was because he had to get money. Like, they were literally just building a new house, and he was like, I can't afford to run for president right now. Like, I have to continue to get paychecks.
Oh, God.
And, like, he had to make a split decision because they were actually catching wind. Like, there were some stories about like, him kind of, like, maybe, like, staffing up or whatever, and he, like, got called into the Fox News president and was like, you can't be on television if you're going to be running for president. And like the next day on his show, he said that he wasn't running for president. It was literally, he had to keep his job at Fox News.
Right.
That's why he didn't run for president.
Oh my God.
I know. Is
hilarious.
That crazy? Yeah.
Well, that's, and I mean, I think that this is a better, the next cycle is better for him anyway. I think 2016 is.
If he doesn't run, he's stupid.
He's way
2016
stupid.
sets up geniusly for him. Because he'll win Iowa and South Carolina. He's got a great populist message that could probably
play better
in 2016 than it did when he ran in 2008.
Absolutely.
Even in the places who don't necessarily.
He's folksy.
He connects well with people.
I would be
scared of him as the nominee, to be perfectly honest, because I think he appeals to a lot of different groups of people.
Well, and we have said frequently, we have based our sort of, you know, we reference him a lot on this podcast because we've been saying for a long time that there needs to be a populist candidate
right.
in the race. And we often say that if the Democrats don't come up with one, someone like Huckabee will
right.
suddenly be ripe for a mass appeal.
It scares me to have a Hillary Huckabee race because I really think that
he has more appeal than she does.
He taps better into the frustration that is sort of like no longer underlying anymore. You know what I mean?
He is sort of like compared to her insiderness, he is the sort of like ultimate message wise, not life wise, obviously, but message wise, he's sort of like the ultimate outsider. He sort of is the best argument against her kind of like insider, not very transparent, like business centric policies.
Right.
He's like everything she does.
Well, and while we have discussed about how publicly she is not super likable, he's could not be more charming.
He's a teddy bear. He's adorable. Just looks friendly, folksy. Looks like you definitely want to have dinner with him.
Totally.
You don't want to talk about abortions at that dinner, but you would want to go.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. But he probably is a lovely host.
Yeah.
Probably be really fun to go to his house for dinner.
Yeah.
Like, he has all of the things that she doesn't have.
Yeah.
And he would have the tools, I think, to unite the Republican Party in a way that only someone like him.
Yes, because I think that he could, while he's not necessarily a Tea Partier, I think that he can sort of like,
I think Tea Partiers
would
go for him.
He can appeal to.
He's got a hateful message.
He has a hateful message. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. He has, and most of them are Christian conservatives, which he is. And he also sort of, I think, more is, he can tap into sort of like their frustration with like the income inequality sort of like in class situation, while without sort of like, without alienating, I think that he can pull in the sort of like the middle, the moderate middle class with that message and still sort of like play up his sort of like crackpot message to, you know, the Tea Partiers who would probably vote for him.
Yeah. No. That's some scary shit.
I know.
He's a fool if he doesn't run, but also don't run.
I know.
It's a terrible idea. Yeah. Don't do it.
Just keep rolling in your bed of Fox News
exactly.
money.
Exactly.
Just keep doing that.
Or just paying down your debts with your bed of Fox News. Yeah. You're probably not rolling in a bed of money.
They might not.
Probably rolling in a dollar bill.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about this next week because I will hopefully have finished at that point. Maybe not, though, because I'm only a third of the way through. So I might be two-thirds of the way through by next week. But Lila will have read it. So we'll be close to collectively having finished it.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll know everything.
Yeah. So now it's time for everyone's favorite segment.
Hillary Pillory. Hillary Pillory. This is an election edition of Hillary Pillory.
Yes.
Because our only Hillary Pillory story of the week is more about Chris Christie than it is about Hillary Pillory.
Yes.
There were exit polls in the New Jersey gubernatorial election that asked people who in a presidential year they would vote for in a race between Hillary and Chris Christie.
Yes.
And the big news of the week was that Hillary would have carried the state 48-44.
Yeah. And everybody is sort of like pointing
blowing out.
Yeah, everybody's blowing out as like that this is like some like, you know, chink in his armor and that like she is just sort of like unbeatable because, you know, she can beat a winning gubernatorial candidate. Lest we forget, 2 years ago, Barack Obama won that state by 17%.
Like, that's a safe blue state.
That's a state.
Winning by 4 points is not a win.
No, that's terrifying.
That's terrible.
Like, if you're winning New Jersey by 4 points, what are you winning Virginia by?
You're losing 0 points.
0 points.
You've
lost Virginia.
What are you winning Ohio and Florida by? You're not winning those.
No, you lose
both
of them.
You're losing by 10 points.
You lose the other 49 states, basically, is what happens.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's not a win. But it was fun. I mean, but it's gotten sort of positioned as this enormous sign that she should be running.
Right, that she's like, you know, an unbeatable sort of like juggernaut. It's like, false.
That's incorrect. If Obama is carrying the state by 14 more points than you're beating the current governor with, then like, don't be excited.
No.
Like, I'm glad to hear that despite stupidly voting for Chris Christie, people in New Jersey have some sense that they would like to have a Democratic president.
Yeah, obviously, because he won by so much. Like, obviously, I think the big story was that a lot of the people who voted for him said that they would have voted for Hillary. But
that's the same reason he didn't want to go into the polls with Booker on the ticket, though.
Well, exactly.
A lot of people who were voting for him were never going to vote for a Republican for president.
Exactly.
It's a blue state.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got this unique position. Yeah. But I don't think that even people in New Jersey think he would be a good president.
Oh, probably not. I mean,
like, people in New Jersey find him unpleasant,
obviously,
too.
Obviously, they
don't. Right. we know for sure.
Right. But I just...
This is not a sign that... Because also, like, what if someone besides Hillary Clinton had been pulled in that race? Like, this is sort of like going down the road of her being the inevitable candidate,
well, that's
which I
true.
Hate.
What if you had... Yeah. What if it was an...
What if Cory Booker was on the
In a presidential race, what if you would have just pulled literally an unnamed Democrat in a presidential race?
Would that
race
have gotten
versus,
you the same numbers?
My guess is probably. Yeah.
Or at least close to. And what if you had pulled a known quantity?
Right.
Like, what would that have? I mean, that's, I like, it's the reason he didn't want to go in with Cory Booker.
Yeah.
Cory Booker probably could have beat him in that poll.
Yeah.
You know, and Cory Booker's not even going to be running for president, but Cory Booker could have beat him in that poll probably. Right. It's I don't think that this points to anything uniquely special about Clinton.
No.
But I was very frustrated to see that it sort of bolstered the claim that she's the inevitable choice. I'm sick of this. Sick of this nonsense. It's got to stop. It's got to stop somewhere. Stopping here. Here.
The buck stops here.
The buck stops on Hillary Pillory.
Yes.
And then final news of the week.
Oh, this is good.
Every time that someone is a moralizing asshole, we get word that they have a history of either substance or obnoxiousness abuse. Ted Cruz has a history of both.
Yes, he does.
But he, specifically...
He also has a history of being a thespian, which is bonkers. Because he was apparently playing... He was in The Crucible when he was at Harvard.
Yeah, that's... Don't do that.
Don't do that at all. But he got so drunk after the first performance when they had their cast party on Everclear.
Yeah.
Like, who's drinking that?
Tacky people.
Tacky people.
Horrible
She's
people.
Canadians.
Canadians.
That's who's drinking Everclear. God. I mean.
He didn't know better.
Was
He's
he drinking,
a Canadian.
I was going to say. Was he drinking moonshine, too? I mean, like, was what was going on there? But anyway, so got so wasted that the next night he couldn't get through the performance. Yeah. There's actually video of it, apparently, where he goes on and he's sitting on a bench on the stage and he's got his head buried in his hands for like 5 minutes. And then he sort of like half-heartedly delivers a line and then sort of just like
walks off stage, in the middle of the scene.
And they all had to like improvise around him and then he never didn't come back for the rest of the play. It's genius.
Oh, Ted Cruz not holding his liquor super well.
No. The next day?
The next day.
That's hard. Bad news right
like
there.
If they had the cast
party. I had a rough night last night, but I am here with you people today.
He's getting through the podcast.
Yeah, that's it.
And we've had a big day of podcasting because we already recorded
this is our second
podcast.
Hour of podcasting
second
today.
Hour.
Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes, Ted Cruz, pull yourself together.
Come on. And in college, too.
In college.
I could have been drinking that amount the next night.
Right.
I was. That's what I was doing.
Yeah. That's what people are doing in college.
Yeah, that's what
I mean,
you do.
I wasn't doing
I know
it.
You weren't.
I'm a teetotaler.
Teetotaler.
That's the new word I've settled on.
Yeah,
I'm turning 30.
Yeah, you. Yes. Oh, that's right. Happy birthday to Lila. It's Lila's 30th birthday on Wednesday, everybody.
Yeah.
Send her birthday wishes.
Yeah, send me birthday wishes.
Facebook
so I look
or
popular.
Wherever.
Yeah. Send me birthday wishes on Facebook. I want to look popular on my birthday so that people who don't like me will think that I'm better than them.
exactly.
But I have decided that now that I'm going to be 30, I can officially stop being somebody who just doesn't drink. Like an uncool person.
Oh, right.
Or what some, a 20-something recently called me straight edge, which I was like, I'm not 14. Like, I haven't heard that term since I was in junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I can stop being straight edge and start being a teetotaler.
Yeah. Right.
Because that's,
well,
the,
you'll
more,
have
that's
a drink
the old
every
lady
once
term.
Too.
Right. Yeah. A teetotaler, I feel like, doesn't imply that I have some sort of philosophical issue with drinking because it's a substance.
It was good that you were being a teetotaler last night because for
someone had
the better portion of the evening, I think you were the only person who realized where they were.
Yeah. And that way, when people asked, I could tell them.
Right.
Could let them know.
We
where
were
they
at
were.
A terrible place, too.
Somewhere. You didn't want to be reminded. I think about how I had to know where we were the whole night.
I know. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. But in any case, that's the news this week.
Yeah.
Check out our special sports full podcast.
Yes.
It'll be up on our website and on iTunes and Stitcher and all of the normal places you can find us.
Yes.
And... say hi to us on Twitter.
Yeah.
We're trying to be better about tweeting.
Yeah.
We would love...
We have been.
We have been. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah.
We will tweet back to you if you tweet at us.
We totally will.
Which would excite us more than you even want to know.
Yeah.
And if you don't have Twitter or understand it because you're over the age of 25, find us on Facebook.
Yeah.
We're there too.
It's an appropriate place to find us as well.
Exactly. Facebook. Yeah. We're also over the age of 25, so that is somewhere that we're comfortable.
Right.
We're comfortable in the landscape of Facebook.
Right.
We're being told by younger people that Twitter
it's
is where
it's not cool
at.
Anymore. Yeah, I know.
But Facebook...
They had a big IPO this week.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Facebook had that big IPO, and everyone is talking about how it's overvalued.
Oh, no. But, Twitter.
I mean, Twitter.
Twitter's
yeah.
was.
Twitter.
Yeah,
had,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Right,
Facebook's
yeah.
also might have been overvalued.
Right.
But Twitter has not really monetized in the way that Facebook
no,
even
was. No,
but
it, like, it went...
It was
opened,
huge.
It opened
yeah.
huge, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then fell a little bit, I think. But yeah, anyway.
But in any case, find us there
yeah.
before ads take over. And we
exactly.
will see
we'll
you next
week.
Bye.